Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou kato. Good evening and assalamu alaikum. Peace be with you. You know, I think it's really appropriate that we start with tēnā koutou and we say it three times, because what we're saying is we greet you, we greet your descendants, and we greet your ancestors. And here we are this evening to sit and talk about our common spiritual ancestry when we look at the noble family of the Prophet Abraham, peace be upon them all. I'm very grateful to be able to, as I was saying, provide part two of the story of these amazing women. You know, every day, you'll be familiar, Muslims pray five times a day in a formal prayer. And every day, 2.2 billion Muslims all around the world end that daily prayer with this invocation. Allahumma salli ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa ala ali Sayyidina Muhammad kama salaita ala Sayyidina Ibrahim wa ala ali Sayyidina Ibrahim falamina inaka hamidun majid. O Allah, send your grace and your honor and your mercy upon Muhammad and upon the family of Muhammad. As you sent your grace, your honor, and your mercy upon Abraham and the family of Abraham, you are indeed praiseworthy, the most glorious. I acknowledge the beautiful lives that have been left to us as part of these prophetic legacies. And in this respect, I acknowledge in particular Ummahat al-Mu'mineen, the mothers of the believers, our mother Sarah and our mother Hajar. May God's peace and blessings be upon them both. We've been asked to share perspectives from within our own faith traditions, and I thought this evening I would focus on the Muslim narrative of one incident in the life of the Lady Hajar. It is a small incident, but it is profound, and it had a lasting effect both in this worldly sense, but also in the spiritual realm. And I wanted to also spend just a moment looking at the spiritual lessons that as Muslims we derive from the life of this beautiful woman. Within this narrative, there are three motifs, and I wanted to keep them close. And they are movement, surrender, and water. The story of Hajar in the Islamic tradition is for us a very luminous example of faith, surrender, and divine connection. At the advent of this story, we see the Lady Hajar in a state of perpetual movement. Her name itself stems from the word for migration. So, for example, you know, the Semitic languages are wonderful. Hebrew, Aramaic, Arabic, they have these three root letters, and from that a whole nuance of different meanings. So, for example, the migration of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and the early Muslim community from Mecca to Medina is the beginning of the Islamic calendar, and it is called the Hijri calendar, meaning migration. If you're interested, we're in the year 1446. But if we look at the many migrations of the Lady Hajar, they're often made from necessity rather than choice. So she's taken from her tribal lands within the greater Egypt and taken to the court of Pharaoh, then taken on the travels of Abraham and the Lady Sarah throughout the Levant, and then finally taken to the deserts of Arabia. Hajar is movement. At the beginning of this particular story, we see the prophet Abraham, the lady Hajar, and their baby Ismail following the command of God and traveling to a barren desert land. There, the prophet Abraham is asked to leave his wife and child. A poignant scene is played out in the Quranic narrative, with Abraham walking away as Hajar runs behind him asking, why? Why is he leaving them? Why is he leaving them in a place of nothingness? Why? Until finally she asks, is this the command of God? And when the prophet says yes, her response is to say, then he will not abandon us. Hope in the face of despair, surety in the face of uncertainty, faith. The spiritual lesson we derive from this is the idea of tawakkul, which is trust in the divine plan. When Hajar is left in the empty desert with her infant son, she found herself in a moment of complete and utter vulnerability. Yet when Abraham confirmed that his actions were commanded by God, her heart aligns with the divine will. No protest, but embracing the divine decree with inner certainty. Not forced to remain where she was, but choosing to remain where she was. True surrender is not passive. It is an act of profound spiritual courage. After some time, the provisions that they had ran out, and there is no life in the desert without water. In desperation, as her child cries from thirst, she begins to search. She walks between two hills, Safa and Marwa, climbing to the crest of each to look for signs of life. Anything in the desert, any animal, any bird, any plant, any moving thing that would indicate that there is water, but there is only desert. Each passing between the hills is a rending of the veils between her and the divine. Seven times she passes between the hills of Safa and Marwa, until finally she falls down next to her infant child and utterly and completely surrenders herself to the divine. And then she sees a shadow on the ground. She reaches out to touch it, and it is wet. She begins to pull back the sand and uncovers a well, an underground spring, an aquifer. This is the well of Zamzam. They are saved. After some time in this place of nothingness, a tribe from Yemen, known as Bani Jurham, are passing by, and they notice birds circling. They know that this is an empty quarter, there is nothing here, so they come to investigate. And much to their surprise, they find a young woman with an infant child and a well of water. Over the years, they settle. According to the code of the desert, they ask the permission of the well owner, of Hajar, who is suddenly rich in the desert with the wealth of water. She gives them permission to settle. The community grows. A city develops. This is Mecca. When we look at this sacred union between trust and effort. This is the idea of jihad. Jihad in Islam is to struggle in the path of God. A scholar engaged in learning is engaged in jihad. A woman engaged in childbirth is engaged in jihad. There is no word for holy war. The jihad of Hajar is her running between the hills of Safa and Marwa, not merely as an act of physical exertion, but a spiritual dance of hope and persistence. Though her heart trusted in God's mercy, she also understood the sacred duty of striving. When she exhausted her human effort, God's response came in the form of the life-giving spring of Zamzam. The effort is rewarded, the effort infused with faith. Hajar's journey reminds us that while the soul must trust, the body must act. Often in our worldly life, women's footsteps are invisible to others. But Hajar teaches us that they are always seen by God. That miracles often occur at the intersection of human perseverance and divine grace. Thirdly, the beauty of patience, of sabr. Hajar's solitude in the desert is the same, often spiritual isolation we sometimes encounter in our own lives, moments when we are left with nothing but our faith. Her patience became her strength and her endurance a bridge to divine provision. This idea of trials as a soul's pathway to purification. For all of those who struggle, Hajar teaches us that hardship does not necessarily imply punishment, but rather becomes a space for transformation, where love, divine love, meets human endurance. After this, Abraham returns constantly, and when his son Ishmael is of age, they are instructed by God to build an edifice. This building, which we now know as the Kaaba, according to Islamic sources, marks sacred ground. The building itself is mere bricks and mortar, but it marks sacred space. It is the place where we believe our primordial parents, Adam and Eve, peace be upon them, first worshipped God on earth. And this says it speaks to our continuous connection with the divine. That is what the Kaaba represents. The idea that we are not in exile, we are not in punishment, we are not estranged from God, but we have an unerring connection. And that is why in those five daily prayers, we turn not in the direction of Mecca, in the direction of the Kaaba, because it represents our connection with the divine from the beginning of human civilization, but also the unity of all humankind. It is also to the Kaaba that Muslims journey on the Hajj pilgrimage. And there we reenact the story of the noble family of the Prophet Abraham, and we literally walk in their footsteps, remembering that all our steps are journeying towards the divine. Fourthly, the legacy of sacrifice and devotion and love, muhabbat. Through her resilience and surrender, the Lady Hajar became a pillar of faith, her actions forever enshrined in the rites of Hajj. Anyone who performs the Hajj pilgrimage. Every man, every woman, every child performs the sa'i. The sa'i means to strive, and it is the walking seven times between the hills of Safa and Marwa, reenacting, walking in the footsteps of the Lady Hajar. And when we do this walk, there is a place where there are two green lights. And when we see this light, we are supposed to walk more quickly to pick up our pace. Because this is where Hajar lost sight of Ismail and couldn't see him. And so she walked faster until she could see him again. This small intimacy, this gentleness in the immensity of the Hajj is such a sweetness, such a feminine touch to the story of the patriarch. Acts of devotion, even when done in solitude and obscurity, ripple outward into eternity. The Lady Hajar's life reminds us that sincere acts of faith leave spiritual footprints that we follow. Finally, the idea of Rahma, that God's mercy is closer than we might think. The spring of Zamzam, that well, emerging at the very moment when hope seemed lost, is a testament to God's Rahma and mercy and the nearness of his provision. What was once a desolate and barren land became the site of spiritual abundance, sustaining millions of hearts and souls to this very day. God's mercy is vast, and his response to the cries of the heart is profound. Hajar's story reminds us that when we call out to God in sincerity and in brokenness, he responds in ways beyond our comprehension and often from the most unlikely places, a spring in the desert. And from that time to this, millions upon millions of pilgrims continue to drink from the well of Zamzam. And whilst we can count the number of footsteps that our mother Hajar took, we can never count the number of people who have drunk from her well and been quenched. This is the principle in Islam of barakah, of blessing. It is a gift from the divine, which is not tied by some sort of religious arithmetic to our deeds and actions. It is tied to the largesse of Al-Karim, the most generous. The most generous gave Hajar endless water, water that we are still receiving today. We are all of us thirsty for God, and through faith we are quenched. To conclude, Hajar's journey is so much more than a historical narrative. For us as Muslims, it is a spiritual archetype. She teaches us that faith is not merely belief, but an active relationship with the divine, one that calls us to trust, to strive, and to surrender all simultaneously. In the Lady Hajar, we see the essence of the soul's journey, the emptiness of the desert, the seeking, the striving, and ultimately, the overflowing mercy of God. Her story whispers to every heart, no matter how desolate the desert of our life may seem, trust in the one who created it. Within every trial lies the potential for transformation, and within every barren valley lies the hidden wellspring of God's love.